In research and development, which I suppose the electronics and systems industry would call it, I think we in the recording industry call it an A&R process, and paying people to plug away in a studio until they come up with something that's worth listening to. The amount of money that our industry invests in that is nearly at the level of the pharmaceuticals. And I recall well from my days in BT that the pharmaceuticals are the benchmark high investing industry. Well, the recording industry is up there with them, and absent a return from the investment that gets made, the riskier projects are going to get dropped. They're never going to have the investment made in them, and that will affect all the sectors in the market. Going on to the CD pricing issue, the industry, I think, has probably not been effective enough in changing perceptions here. It's not just a piece of plastic that costs maybe 50 cents or whatever to produce. What you're buying there is intellectual property. And until we can change those perceptions, then the online provision, the online downloading, will be difficult, because people will perceive themselves as buying, well, nothing, just a recording that's valueless that they feel free to copy on to other people, because there's no physical product associated with it. I was pleased that the title of this panel include the word management and not the word protection. I hope it goes without saying that what the recording industry wants to do is not to prevent all copying. What we're happy to do is to license people to copying, as long as that is under conditions of authorisation. And there's a couple of approaches that are being suggested to this. One's called super distribution, which is kind of the audio media model which is equivalent to shareware. You just make things available, let people download them. They can maybe preview them, but they can't actually pay them until they pay the money to the rights holder, and that lets them listen to them or have them for a week or whatever. And there's a system that I would have called authorities when I was a computer scientist, and this is maybe typified by the intertrust model, where things can be freely copied around, but they carry with them some instructions on what you can do with them. And if you want to copy them to somebody else and give them the right to play it, some money has to change hands and go up through a supply chain. If you want to make a copy so that you can play it on another machine you own, well, maybe the rules are different there. And the point is here that all of these processes need management, and that management needs protection from some technology. And the question then arises, how will that protection arise? The name technical measures isn't a terribly helpful one, but it's one that's, I'm afraid, stuck in the minds of the legal and legislative people, so it's one we're going to have to continue to use. They need to have intrinsic strength. There's no point in having a technical measure, and indeed the treaty language on this talks about effective technical measures. They've got to have some strength in themselves, but as they age, they will become more widely hacked, and they need legal protection against hacking, which the law calls circumvention. Not a very helpful word, but that's the one we're stuck with again. Now, looking at the legal language of doing the rounds in Europe at the moment, we'll look at what devices are being protected. And the software directive has language that talks about the sole intended purpose of a device. That's a very weak level of protection. If it does anything else, then it's not protected. There's a draft copyright directive, which is the reason for the sensitivity I expressed at the beginning, and the language in the current draft talks about limited commercial significant purpose other than to circumvent. You can just see the lawyer sitting in a room dreaming these words up, can't you? Some of them are at the table even. What that really means is that provided it has some other commercial function, it's legitimate. Fred, we regard that as a hacker's charter, because it doesn't outlaw many of the devices which are offensive to us. But it's worse, because it doesn't deal with intent either. So you can intentionally circumvent other people's technical measures, as long as you've got other functions in there. We might regard that as a corporate hacker's charter. I can just see the phone ringing on Monday now. You said what? Still. This is my classification that was of the type of technical measures that were on the slide we had at the beginning. And I think maybe the panel discussion later, we can see if this lines up with other people's view of the world. And I put these into unilateral measures, bilateral measures, and then licensed or contractual measures. We don't have a good word for what those mean yet, but I'll go through those and we'll talk a little bit about them. Unilateral measures are implemented by the rights holder and don't require the cooperation of the recorder manufacturers or people who do recording or reproductions, as the lawyers would call them. The effectiveness they have is a mixture of technical and legal. They're technically effective, and in some cases you've got legal protection against people getting around them. They've been shown to work for video, and Macrovision is the best example there, and for software to an extent. But although my phone rings regularly with some inventor telling me he's invented the means that we can put on a CD that will mean nobody will ever be able to record it, when you actually come to challenge them to demonstrate it, they disappear into the back room and you don't actually see them again. If such a system existed, it would be interesting, but I hold no hopes of it arriving.